Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very symbolically important episode of Uncanny Treks as we get to the fourth episode of our coverage of the Jack Kirby and Stan Lee run on Fantastic Four. This is Fantastic Four Epic Volume 4, Mystery of the Black Panther. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing okay, Bob. Not gonna lie, Fantastic Four started to kind of take the nosedive.
Nosedive's a little strong, but there's definitely a dip in some of these issues. But it starts strong, doesn't it?
It does start strong, Bob, especially with the Black Panther issue at number 52.
We're covering issue 52 through issue 67, and then also annuals 4 and 5 are all collected in FF Epic Volume 4. You want to talk a little bit about issue number 52, the Black Panther exclamation point, Matt?
Here we have the first appearance of the Black Panther, which I thought was cool. A lot of people think first appearances, they're going to show up in their own issue. But back then, that wasn't the case. A lot of these characters were brought in to test the waters to see if they could have their own book at some point.
At a certain point, we talked about maybe in the midst of Volume 2 and a little bit in Volume 3, FF was very much the Gistar cycle ride of Daredevil's Spider-Man to a lesser extent, the Avengers, the X-Men. But at some point in the last volume, it got onto this rotating cast of tryout stuff. So we have Black Panther here. We had Inhumans last volume in this volume. We're going to have at least one other character we could that's a sort of a tryout character we get later.
The thing with the Black Panther, too, is all the core ideas are all still there. You could read this issue and have watched the most recent films and still understand and connect with the character the same way. You still have Wakanda, you still have Vibranium, you still have all those things that make Wakanda and the Black Panther who he is. They've been there since the get-go.
It's also interesting that even though we primarily think of Black Panther as a solo character because of the movies, right, and his general prominence, he really isn't a solo character for a long time. He's going to join the Avengers after this. And even when we were kids in the 90s, to the extent we knew who the Black Panther was, we thought of him as another Avenger, right?
Right. We didn't know a great deal about him. In my brain, for some reason, I always associated him with Batman, I guess, because of the outfit.
He's different in some ways, but in other ways, he is a Marvel Batman. But he does get two solo books in the 70s, which we might look out way down the line. Don McGregor writes him. This was back in the day. It was very common to have a jungle-themed comic of kind of Tarzan stuff. And so Black Panther's first ongoing solo book was, I believe, called Jungle Adventures, which sounds a little racist today. I don't think in context it's maybe quite as bad as it sounds today. But that run in Jungle Adventures is great. Then he gets a solo book that Kirby does in the late 70s that's wacky. It's wild and wacky. We should definitely look at those two at some point in the distant future.
Bob, Wakanda here, it's drawn as though it's almost like jungle made out of machines, which is cool aesthetic-wise. Yeah. I guess the attention to the Fantastic Four by gifting them an air car. So you like it better than the Fantastic Four and the air jet bike, Bob?
It's an interesting design. The air car is sports car-like, but it's with slick. A bubble at the top. Then it's got jet wings at the back. I don't really dig it. I don't know if we see this one much again. I can't remember if it comes up later in this collection or not, but compared to that Aero bike or compared to the Fantastic Car, I can't say I'm a huge fan of it personally. Don't want to insult T'Challa's engineered design.
Well, Bob, T'Challa brings in their own false pretenses, so.
I did want to ask, Matt, do you think Reed is something of a gearhead? Late in this Kirby FF run, we're really getting the sense of Reed is, you want his attention, you get him a new car.
Who would not be impressed by a new flying car? You'd really have to be a gearhead to, you know.
Well, Matt, you wanted to lead off by talking about Black Panther, but I know you're also just chomping at the bit, because I wouldn't let you do it last week, but you're just chomping at the bit to talk about Wyatt Wingfoot.
Yeah, this Wyatt Wingfoot guy, Bob, he shows up in Johnny's college, and they become best friends immediately. He's a pretty big guy. He's Native American.
But he sleeps a lot, which is potentially a little problematic, right? There's lazy Native American stereotypes that's maybe playing into.
I don't know if he was narcoleptic or what's going on there.
But this is the issue where Wyatt breaks out. He has some speeches about how he's descended from the greatest trackers in history. Around about page 12 and 52, we do have him impressing Reed and Ben. So, yeah, I don't know. Wyatt's basically the fifth member of the Fantastic Four for a lot of this collection, and he and Johnny are always going off on solo adventures, usually to find the Inhumans.
Well, he wears purple pants, and a wife beater shirt.
It's important to have a visual uniform, Matt. On page 10, where we have my guess at your favorite panel, where we have T'Challa split kicking Ben and Johnny.
That was my favorite panel. Definitely a really cool looking move.
From mine, like in 16, when T'Challa absorbs a shot from Ben, that was impressive. But he's got great fights with Sue and Reed later in this issue, too.
Bob, I have to say, this is probably one of the best issue in this collection. I'm going to go ahead and just throw that out there.
I like the next part, too, but this is definitely a bit better than number 53, the second part of the two-part story.
Right. So moving into number 53, Bob, How It Began. This gives us the first appearance of Claw.
You love Claw. We do open with this a bit stereotypical, but amazing dance of friendship splash page of having the Wakandans celebrate the Fantastic Four. It's visually very impressive. My favorite panel comes really quickly, which is on page 2. You have T'Challa lighting a cigarette and explaining that he's the richest man in the world, which is something you sometimes forget, right? Talking about him as the Marvel Universe version of Batman or the Marvel Universe version of Bruce Wayne. Nowadays, we often think of T'Challa as the ruler, but here in these comics, they're emphasizing his wealth. And it's also an interestingly similar presentation to how the comic has earlier presented Dr. Doom and Namor and even the guy Gideon from last collection that we weren't super impressed by.
They're all really, really rich.
Indeed. Matt, so my guess at your favorite panel was on page 12. I just think that's a magic number for you. But we have Claw has made a sound gorilla. He's made a gorilla out of its vibration sound. And that sound gorilla, who initially just appears to be a giant red gorilla, is grabbing Johnny while he's in the torch form.
My favorite panel was a little later, Bob, on 17, where the sound gorilla has turned into a sound elephant. The Thing is trying to flip it over. He's got it by one of its paws.
Did it turn in, or is that just another sound creature?
Probably just another sound creature.
Nice. Ben lifting an elephant. I feel like we've seen that a couple times before, but we haven't seen it be a red sound elephant.
Yeah. So. A red sound panther coming from the machine is pretty scary, too.
That's great. Now, moving on to issue number 54, Whosoever Finds the Evil Eye. Matt, people talk a lot about the first two issues Black Panther appears in. You see those reprinted a lot. People often reprint 52 and 53 together. But as we noted with the Inhuman stuff last volume, stuff tends to carry over. It tends to almost be more running subplots than multi-part stories. People don't often talk about Black Panther's third appearance where he's playing baseball with the Fantastic Four.
The way these comics are structured is so much different than they are today in this way. They let stuff carry over into the beginning of the next issue. It's like they're trying to tie up loose ends, but at the same time, they're trying to make it seem like there's more than just them going on these big adventures with these other characters. And that's where they have the baseball playing here. Reminds me of Deep Space Nine.
Very true. Also, the X-Men. The X-Men do love to play baseball. Matt, on page 4, I had to ask the very important question as we see another amazing splash page of the interiors of Black Panther's palace in Wakanda. Who is the better interior decorator? Is it Panther, Namor, or Doom? All three are putting up pretty fierce competition for that title.
From what I've seen of Black Panther, it's impressive. Having a giant statue in the center of your lounge.
It's definitely between Doom and Black Panther personally. If you really go for the Little Mermaid, if you really go for the underseas aesthetic, maybe then you could say Namor, but I don't, so I can't really say Namor. Then I'll also pointedly say that notice that Black Bolt is not on that list. That's why I don't like Black Bolt as much. Black Bolt had a good interior decorator like Dr. Doom or Black Panther. I would respect Black Bolt more.
He's got his own piano player and everything. He's got everything decked out here.
You're right that Panther wins the interior decoration because it's more Black Panther themed, whereas Dr. Doom's decorations are less Doom themed and they're more just opulent.
It's impressive.
My theory that Black Panther is the best, and your theory, is a little bit disrupted on page 10 when we have Human Torch, Johnny, and Wyatt exploring this temple, trying to figure out something about reconnecting Johnny and Crystal from the Inhumans. And we have this really sick dragon statue on page 10. That's somewhat disrupted my theory that Black Panther is the best interior decorator, because I don't know if this Professor John had this done or some other more ancient people, but this is an amazing statue at the bottom of this tent.
It's very creepy. And let me just take a moment, Bob, to say that this set of issues is where Crystal fully takes effect and drives me crazy until she's found. Mm-hmm. She just dominates everything Johnny does throughout these issues. And it's sickening.
Matt just hates to see a guy head over heels for a girl. He just hates it.
It's driving me crazy. That annoying piece of Johnny throughout these issues makes me dislike them more.
So, Matt, in the notes you shouted out on page 11 where we first see Prester John, he's in this really hodgepodge stance. Looking at that, does it remind you of the stance that they find the engineer in the first Alien movie way back in 1978?
It looks like he's sitting on a toilet and his eye thing is a plunger.
I can see that. I wasn't seeing that till you said it. But now,
yeah, that's
now
exactly
that
what this looks like.
So you're saying it looks like the final days of Elvis?
I think that's what they're going for here, Bob. It's a weird...
It's wild that Jack Kirby influenced both the final days of Elvis and the movie Alien in 1978 here. And this is probably, what, like 1966, 67?
Yeah, it's a rough drawing of this character. I really don't understand what it's supposed to be.
Well, see, I don't think it's rough. I think it's well done in an interesting way. I agree with you that now that I think about it, it has some unfortunate parallels, but the level of detail on this splash page and on the idol, the next thing, is impressive.
He finally does get off his throne, Bob. You see, it's just a dude with a red mustache.
Have you ever heard of the myth of Prester John before, Matt?
No, Bob.
Back in the Middle Ages, there were always rumors that there was some rich Christian king somewhere deep in Africa or somewhere far east in Asia who was going to come and save the Crusaders or help the Crusaders out or defeat the Turks or defeat the Abbasid Caliphate, depending on what time period you're talking about. Some people, even when the Europeans first started hearing about Genghis Khan, they thought Genghis Khan was Prester John, this mythical Christian king that shows up in a lot of medieval mythology. Does that make sense?
Oh, okay. Gotcha. That does make sense. Wingfoot did point out that he heard about him in history class before.
Indeed. Some of the Crusaders actually do adjust their policies in the Middle East or in West Asia because they think Prester John is coming to save them. So he does have real historical effects, even though he's a total myth.
And Prester John cannot save the Human Torch's pain here, Bob, because he gets his eye exploded.
Tragic, Matt.
Rescuing a crystal.
Speaking of pain, Matt, I want to go ahead and jump to issue number 55, When Strikes the Silver Surfer. And Matt, did you know that Alicia Masters was a acoustic guitar bro? And were you as pained to learn that as I was when she starts strumming that acoustic guitar?
It was what it is, Bob. Apparently, anyone can find Alicia's apartment at any time. It's the North Star. Just use it to get ready to be.
Is it anybody or is it just Ben and the Surfer?
Bad guys just show up on top of her roof all the time by accident. Sandman eventually shows up there. She's just a magnet for these bad guys.
That's true. So this whole issue, mostly a Surfer Thing fight. And honestly, I was kind of hoping from, not that the art's bad or anything, but I was hoping for a little more from the fight until we got to page 13 and 14, where it gave me all I wanted. On 13, the panel of the Surfer punching Ben off the aerocycle, that was great. And then the top panel on page 14, where Surfer basically shoves Ben in the aerocycle through a brick wall. Those are both two amazing panels.
Yeah, the entire issue is really just Ben and the Surfer going at each other.
Even though plot-wise, concept-wise, maybe we're starting to hit lower moments of Prester John, definitely not an immortal Fantastic Four edition. But at the same time, I stand by my assertion that Kirby's drawing the hell out of 54 and 55.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't help with 56. We get the return of the Claw.
I had nothing to say about this one, man. It's not terrible. I just had nothing to say about it.
I didn't either. The same character as before. He's got a costume now.
Then coming up next, we actually don't go to 57. Instead, we go to Annual 4, The Torch That Was. So here we have the Mad Thinker resurrecting the Golden Age Human Torch. I don't know, Matt, did you have any response to the Golden Age Human Torch? I know neither you nor I are very familiar with the Golden Age Human Torch.
It was interesting to learn about the original Torch, and I do like the way that Kirby draws the original Torch a different way from Johnny so that you can tell the difference between who is who, the way their flames line up.
The different styles, I'm not totally sure because I've only read one Golden Age Human Torch story, but I think that is more how the Human Torch was drawn in the Golden Age. The flames were drawn in that fairly different way.
Yeah, it's like drawing hair on a human. It's parted a different way so you can tell it's him.
Oh, that's an amazing comparison. That's really funny. Yeah, the flames are the hair of the torches. That's great. In some ways, given how quick Kirby and Lee went for Golden Age revivals with Moore and with Captain America, right, it's surprising that it takes this long to get to the other major Golden Age Marvel character, and they don't make it permanent resurrection, at least for now. That's also a little surprising, but maybe they want to defend the brand identity of the Human Torch.
Yeah, is it at least plausible?
We start a four-part story from issue number 57. This is a four-part story where Doom steals the power cosmic from Silver Surfer and uses it to run wild for four issues. 57 is Inner Doom is the title, and my favorite panel from this issue is Surfer is flying in the window of Castle Doom to pay a social call on Dr. Doom, which was really sick. What was your favorite panel from Inner Doom, Matt?
My favorite panel is on page 13, Bob. We've got Doom is being armed to the teeth by his minions. He's got this blue exoskeleton suit that he's going to use to drain the power, the cosmic powers from Silver Surfer, but he's trying to do it secretly, so he's whispering to his minions to be quiet so as not to distract Silver Surfer from what's going on.
My guess at your favorite panel was going to be two pages later on 15, where we actually see him use all that mechanism to harvest the power cosmic from the Silver Surfer, and we see him stand Doom surging with the power cosmic standing over a prone Surfer. It's pretty great.
Bob, we move into issue 58, Dismal Dregs of Defeat, where there's not a great deal to talk about other than the fact that Dr. Doom appears to us in the form of a negative Dr. Doom.
I think he's given himself a negative electrical charge, which Kirby represents as drawing him black on the page. It's cool. Kirby clearly decided he liked drawing regular Dr. Doom on the Silver Surfer surfboard better, right? But it almost makes him the mirror opposite of Silver Surfer when he's flying around on the surfboard blackened. That's both of our favorite panels for the Dresmal Dregs of Defeat, number 58.
Not to be confused, Bob, within 59, where my favorite panel in the issue Doomsday is where Doom is kicking a down Silver Surfer who's had his powers taken away.
Matt just loves to see a man kicked when he's down. And what was your other favorite panel from this?
You've also got a panel of Black Bolt pushing down Maximus, followed by Black Bolt screaming across three panels. The visualization of the scream itself across three panels, it's powerful.
So my favorite panel in 59 Doomsday is on page 14, where Doom turns a gorilla red with the power cosmic, just on a lark, just no reason. And it really furthers this existing connection of the Fantastic Four foes and red gorillas. We've seen it with Red Ghost and his Super Apes. We saw it with Claw in the earlier arc, and now we're just seeing Doom randomly do it.
That's what I would do if I had the cosmic power too, Bob.
Yeah, so the next issue, number 60, The Peril and the Power, is the fourth of this four-part Doom Surfer story, Matt. And I guess I never lent this to you, but this issue means a lot to me because my old man had a reprint of it, a very tattered reprint copy of it. It had a different cover, but he gave it to me when I was a kid, and so I read it to death. And there's some pages on this, I'm going to talk about three specifically, that are just indelibly burned into my memory, right? I just can't forget. So there's a close-up of Doom crouched on the Silver Surfer's board on page 3. There's an image of Doom's jailer beating up the Silver Surfer as he's in Doom's dungeon on page 6. And then on 8, there's a panel of Sue using Reed as a parachute. And all of those deep, deep nostalgic triggers for me. But in an interesting contrast, I don't remember at all that we have a Black Panther cameo in this comic, or we have a Jacked Watcher cameo, or that we have a fairly extended appearance from the Inhumans, including Karnak and Crystal, killing some trees for some reason. And it's very funny that on the one hand, I strongly latched on to Doom, the Surfer, and the FF when reading this, but I glossed over Black Panther, the Inhumans, and the Watcher, barely knew who they were, didn't really figure out the Watcher and the Inhumans deal until I read this much, much later as an adult. And if you told me at age 15 or 30, yeah, you've read comics with the Inhumans and the Watcher, and I'd be, what? Or Black Panther? I'd be, I did.
Well, Bob, the question you got to ask yourself, though, is did you read the issue of Fantastic Four where Sandman gets his new costume?
No, and I'm glad, because it would have put me on a dark path, Matt. Where Stalks the Sandman introduces an awful new Sandman costume. It's a little bit, because Sandman is a Steve Ditko creation for Amazing Spider-Man, and Sandman's original striped t-shirt and pants look is a very Ditko look. And Kirby's, well, if I'm going to keep using him, I need to make him my own. I need to give him a more science fictional design. Usually I love Kirby, but oh boy, this don't work. This don't work, dog.
No, it's just so unnecessary.
One good thing about this issue, Matt, is as you were talking about earlier, we're batting a lot of cleanup at the starts of these issues, right? So we're batting cleanup from the four-part Doom and Surfer story. And so we do get a cool image of the Surfer breaking free from Castle Doom and tearing it down in revenge for his imprisonment.
Then that's pretty much it. Then we move on to issue 62, Bob, where One Shall Save Him.
Reed gets lost in the negative zone, and Ben is trying to get a hold of Reed in the negative zone, Matt. So he's trying to phone him using a negative zone phone, which that goes to one of your favorite motifs in the run of Ben on the phone. But here it's Ben on a wild negative zone phone design. It's quite something, quite something. And they get Triton to go into the negative zone and try to save Reed. Triton is by far the lamest of the Inhumans. But this image of him swimming through the negative zone is cool. It reminds me of one of my favorite moments from the 80s Legion, where the underwater Legionnaire Tellus swims through the Phantom Zone. I got to give it up to Triton in this issue. Great use of Triton.
Well, Bob.
So we meet Blastar in this issue, Matt. And initially we see him in a mummy wrap. And just as Triton reminded me of something from the 80s, mummy wrap Blastar in the negative zone reminded you of something from the 90s.
Yeah, it reminded me of how the way Doomsday was wrapped up prior to going after Superman and the Death of Superman run.
On the one hand, Blastar, way cooler than Doomsday, but you got to give Doomsday credit, man. Doomsday actually breaks out of that containment suit, whereas Blastar's exit from his mummy wraps in the negative zone, it's cool, but I was hoping for a more dramatic splash page when he did it.
Yeah, not as cool.
So, Matt, I've got a strong nostalgia for Blastar because I had the action figure as a kid. Do you hate him? Oh, Blastar.
I never really had a problem with him. He's just kind of a blue gorilla guy, and he shoots explosives from his fingers.
He's the Living Bomb Burst, Matt, which is the title of the next issue where he teams up with the Sandman. Ironic that one of my favorite Fantastic Four foes, Blastar, teams up with one of my least favorites, the Sandman in this costume. Blastar is a living gorilla, so we're keeping the gorilla theme going for these issues. There's not that much to say about how Blastar and the Sandman ally in 63, so I guess we could skip ahead to 64 and 65 are a two-part Kree story that introduced the Kree, Matt. The 64 is Century Sinister. My favorite panel is we get an amazing splash page of the titular Kree Century 459, the Century Sinister. And then my guess at your favorite panel would be something that you really hate to see is about to happen. Johnny and Crystal are about to make out. They're about to lock lips. They're about to have a little quality makeout sesh. And the dog, Lockjaw, just says no thanks and interrupts that.
I appreciate Lockjaw doing that. We don't need Johnny and Crystal taking things to the next level.
In the second part of the story, Beyond Planet Earth, that's number 65, we get Reed in a suit wrapping his arm around Ronan the Accuser's hammer, and we meet Ronan the Accuser in this issue, so it's pretty historically important for Marvel in those terms, and I like the image of Reed's suited arm wrapped around Ronan the Accuser's hammer.
It is historically significant because of Ronan the Accuser's first appearance, but man, I feel like they could have done a lot more with Ronan the Accuser here. A dull entrance.
I honestly don't know if people fully start using Ronan's potential until maybe Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning in the 2000s. Maybe there's good Ronan stuff before then that I just don't know. But yeah, that's a shame. Well, moving on to 66 and 67, Matt, it's a two-parter where we meet the sensational character find of whatever year this is. And that sensational character find is Him, capital H, Him. So 66 is What Lurks Behind the Beehive. 67 is When Opens the Cocoon. So we see Him in a cocoon, Matt. And I gotta ask, do you prefer negative zone mummy wrap of Blastar, or do you prefer the Him in a cocoon?
The mummy wrap was neat. The way it was a little more mysterious, and you thought something scary was going to be under it. I give it to the mummy wrap.
Matt's prejudice against caterpillars, check.
With the cocoon, right, this ended up being Adam Warlock, right?
Him is Adam Warlock, which you actually called while reading it, right? Because you remembered the cocoon?
In other media, they've used the cocoon as his entrance into different worlds.
When I went back and read this whole run a few years ago, I didn't call that at all. I was like, Him? Who is Him? I had to look it up. And, oh, it's Adam Warlock. Oh, that makes sense. Well, Matt, that brings us into our last issue of this set of the run. That's Annual 5, Divide and Conquer. We get the hate monger, the Adolf Hitler we have at home. It's Psycho Man. Psycho Man's not bad, but he's not hate monger. Although, in a way, that's a good thing because nobody wants somebody to be Hitler. But we do get to see the Psycho Man's controls that are labeled fear, doubt, and hate, which is something I really loved. And I did think that this was an interesting issue because it's also a Black Panther Inhumans crossover. And in classic Mary Marvel fashion, the Black Panther has to fight the Inhumans before they can team up. And so we get on page 10, we see the Panther fight Medusa and Karnak, which I thought was pretty cool.
In the end of the issue, Bob, we found out that Sue is actually pregnant.
Matt, were you surprised that Sue gets pregnant in the original Kirby run and the original Silver Age run?
I was a bit surprised that it was that far back. I didn't realize it was in the 60s.
Franklin dates back to the late 60s as a character, whereas I think Valeria only dates back to the late 90s. Yeah, quite an interesting difference there. All right, Matt, we've been over the issues 52 through 67 and two annuals. Of these issues, what's your favorite?
My favorite, Bob, would be issue 52. It's the first appearance of Black Panther.
Yeah, that makes sense. I figured you would go with that. I don't want to make it sound like the run is all downhill from here, and also don't want to just do this for nostalgia, but I think you can argue that issue number 60, The Power on the Peril, the climax of that four-part Doom Surfer story is also the climax of the whole run. So I'm going to go with that. And yeah, I think that's markedly emphasized by the fact that my least favorite issue, 61, where we get the new Sandman costume, immediately follows 60. So for me, that's a little bit of a turning point in this run.
Bob, my least favorite issue in this run is issue 56, which is the return of Claw. It just seems forgettable. And I don't feel like there was enough time put between Claw's origin and his return.
Deeply ironic that you love Black Panther, but you hate Claw, his arch nemesis. Curious, Matt. Curious. So who is your favorite Fantastic Four member in these issues, Matt?
Well, I'm going to give it to Ben, mainly just due to object of elimination here, because I can't stand Johnny in these issues because he's so infatuated with Crystal, and just his whole character is just caught up in that. Reed is extremely chauvinistic. It's taken up way too high, especially after getting married to Sue. And then Sue doesn't really do much of anything now that she's revealed her invisible force fields and shields, which is just what she constantly is using. That's her whole character, is just throwing up shields and doing what Reed says. So by process of elimination, I got to go with Thing.
That makes sense. I like Ben in these issues too. I would specifically say in Annual 5, where the team finds out that Sue is pregnant, Ben celebrating Sue's pregnancy is very sweet. It's a cool visual. So that Ben would be my favorite FF member in these issues too. For least favorite member, to what you're saying, Reed and Sue really feel like afterthoughts for large parts of this collection. So I'm going to have to, until the pregnancy announcement in the last issue. So I'm going to have to say Reed and Sue maybe tie for my least favorite Fantastic Four members. But Matt, I assume your least favorite Fantastic Four member will be Johnny, right? You hate Johnny and Crystal.
No, I'm going to give it a Reed, this issue, but this set of issues. Yeah, it's pretty
so
bad.
So chauvinistic, it outweighs your hatred for Johnny and
it's
Crystal.
It's pretty bad.
Impressive.
So my favorite Fantastic Four foe in these issues, Bob, I'm just going to go with Dr. Doom, because he does take the power cosmic. It is cool to see him on the Silver Surfer's board.
I was originally going to go there, but you took it and freed me, so I can just say Blastar. I can play to my childhood nostalgia for the action figure, Matt.
Now, my least favorite Fantastic Four foe, Bob, was one that we didn't even mention. It's Quasimodo. He was in that annual. He's this computer that gave himself the image of Quasimodo. He could, you know, pick any image he wanted, but he went with Quasimodo.
And the Surfer gave him a body or something?
Correct, yes.
Quasimodo's not great. I still feel like he's much to be preferred to the new Sandman comic, 61. Matt, I assume for our favorite guest star, we're both just going to go Black Panther. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then for least favorite guest star, I assume we're both going to just go the Inhumans collectively, but I don't know. Do you want to single out Crystal or Triton or someone?
No, I'm good. I'm good with this, although I would say Triton does show up way too often for his limited power set.
It is shocking to me, similar to the dynamic you were describing and I was describing, where Sue fades into her role as wife and mother in these issues, and or wife and expectant mother, and doesn't do much. Medusa was great in Volume 3 as a villain on her own, and now that we're seeing her just as the queen of the Inhumans, she's doing almost nothing, and yeah, it's a shame. I really liked solo Medusa. Well, Matt, I was originally going to rank the volumes for these: The Coming of Galactus, which is Volume 3 that we did last week. The first, then this one, Mystery of the Black Panther, number 4. Then the first one, World's Greatest Magazine. And then the second one, Master Plan of Dr. Doom. But you would somewhat object to that ranking, right?
Yeah, I would prefer Mystery of the Panther should not be number 2. We need to move it around.
Even with the Black Panther, even with the Negative Zone?
Even with those things, Bob, I just don't feel that...
Matt just hates Claw so much.
I didn't feel like it adds much to the whole mythos at all. A Master Plan of Dr. Doom had some stronger books.
More gets added to the Marvel mythos, though, in Mystery of the Panther. More Inhuman stuff. You got the Negative Zone. You've got the Kree. You've got Adam Warlock. Definitely it's not as well done. And maybe on that basis of what does more to build the world, the debut of the original set of villains in the World's Greatest Magazine is probably more important. So if we modified the ranking where it was Coming of Galactus, the first one, World's Greatest Magazine, then Mystery of the Black Panther, and then the Master Plan of Dr. Doom. Could you live with that?
Yeah, I can live with that. That's all right.
Cool. All right. Well, this has been our coverage of Fantastic Four, Epic Volume 4, Mystery of the Panther. Join us in a week or two where we do Volume 5. The last one is War with Atlantis, but I can't remember what the name. Maybe the name is Doom. Maybe that's the title.
That's correct.
Listeners, it's Fantastic Four, Epic Volume 5. We'll be discussing it here in a week. Until then, I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. This is Uncanny Treks. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.